The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
You're listening to Hertfordshire's Mix 92.6. I'm Vivian Glass, and this is The Parents Show. And joining me for a discussion about the business of hydrotherapy and other services for pets, we have Tamsin, the owner of Healing Hounds in Southdown in Harpenden. Welcome to the show, Tamsin.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's really nice that you have asked me to talk about it.
Well, we're really interested. We're pet lovers on this show. I think we counted how many rabbits and cats and dogs just we all had among us as the presenters of The Parents Show. So we absolutely love hearing about how we can also look after our fur families. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about how you set up Healing Hounds?
Yeah. So I'm a registered veterinary nurse, and I started my journey in a busy North London hospital as a vet nurse, lots of night shifts, lots of horrible cases, but really lovely and rewarding. And then I sort of realised there was a bit of a gap. Dogs would come in for surgeries on their knees, stifles as we call them, and then they weren't having much follow-up or support after. And if you think if you had a broken leg, you wouldn't just say, okay, 6 weeks rest, we'll fix it, and then off you go back to life. You would have rehabilitation. So I spoke to my boss at the time, and we looked into it, and I went and did the course of hydrotherapy alongside my nursing. And yeah, I was able to get dogs straight from surgery in for hydro once their skin had recovered enough for being in the water. And then yeah, COVID hit, and I went back to full-time nursing after my children and realised that I'd like to just set up on my own and be under my own rules, because I felt like I could really do a gold standard of care and see dogs right the way through and be really, I pride myself on when we book clients in to stick with the same person, same therapist, because the dogs really bond and we just love them and we have such a good friendship with the owners and the dogs, and it's really important that we just stay on the same therapist if we can. And yeah, love it.
And I guess that is really important, Tamsin, because the dogs can't speak in the way that a human patient could tell you what's working, what's not. So it's really important, I guess, that you have that relationship with the owner as well. And can...
Yeah, exactly. And we get the personality of both of them coming out. So they start off on their best behaviour, and then these little cheeky behaviours start coming out. And some of the dogs won't walk unless we've got the biscuits in front of them, like a carrot on a stick, that sort of thing. And they need their cream cheese to stand on our, we have a stance and analyzer. So it's looks like weighing scales, but they stand with each of their four limbs in each quarter. And it tells us how much weight in a percentage that they put through each limb. So it's really good piece of data that we can then show owners that before, when we first started on their initial consultations, how much they offload certain limbs. And then we can get them better results as we go through treatments. And yeah, it's a lovely way of progress.
Oh, fantastic. So what services, you mentioned hydrotherapy there, and is that post-surgery, is that the usual route that people would come to you?
Yeah, we do. Hydrotherapy is probably our main service that we offer, which is an underwater treadmill. So we get in with them, we're in the water with them, and the water fills up very slowly from underneath, and then the treadmill belt moves, and we help support them in their walking. And so we can help sort of gently manipulate the gait into the right way of placing their limbs, so we can build the muscle with the viscosity of the water. So then having to push through the water builds the muscle, and whilst we lift weight out of them through the buoyancy. So it's really a good way of getting muscles to work without having such a strain of the weight of the dog on top of the joints. And we do physiotherapy. So it's another way of we can pinpoint areas. The girls, I'm not a physio, I'm a veterinary nurse, hydrotherapist, but I have girls that are physiotherapists and hydrotherapists. So they are able to pinpoint areas of concern through touch with the physiotherapy and help stretch out any tight muscles or locations that may be causing, you know, if you're not using your legs properly, you overwork muscles that aren't really meant to be carrying such a weight of the dog. So they can help loosen those up. We do laser therapy, which is another type of light therapy, which helps promote cell rejuvenation and decrease inflammation. And the stance analyzer we have, veterinary nurse clinics, dental cleaning. We do a little bit of cleaning on the teeth as well. So yeah.
Oh, fantastic. So if a dog's coming in and say it's had an injury, maybe what are the sort of, you mentioned knees there, what are the most common kind of treatments that you provide?
So the conditions that we see the most are probably cruciate ligaments rupturing. So that's the ligaments in the knee. Then they can sort of tear, they can partially tear. So we can start with hydrotherapy. If they've still got quite a bit of mobility in that limb, we can do some hydro and potentially avoid surgery. Sometimes if the ligament is totally torn, there really should really have surgery. So when we get them in after that, hip dysplasia, whereas the hips are not quite in the right place, the same with elbows. And we have a lot of dachshunds with spinal problems. As you can imagine, they're really long and there's just so much length to deal with. So yeah, they often have bad backs and we have to help with those.
Oh, and what about elderly dogs, Tamsin? Yeah. Or maybe dogs that have got into a sort of palliative care scenario, is that something else that you can help with?
Yeah, sometimes we get people calling and they're sort of at the end of, they don't really know where else to go, where their last sort of call. And it's so rewarding to have these golden oldies come in because they've sort of lost. Dogs do become a bit depressed at the end if they can't keep up with their family or go upstairs even. So we have in our consultations with the older ones, we say things like try and carry them up the stairs so they're still sleeping with you at night. So then they're still feeling included. And yeah, they just need a little bit of a revitalizing. And I guess having them in the treadmill, we can help them build some muscle back where it's fatigued. And we can get them back to enjoying a little bit more walking, and we can just help the owners accommodate. So smaller walks, shorter, but more often walking them is better than one big long hour out where you're sort of having to drag them. The old ones are really rewarding because they've given their owners so much, and then it's a little bit that we can give back to them to say, you know, you've done really well.
And I suppose your veterinary training must come really to the fore here. It's obviously something you're very passionate about, but you know, that knowledge, that really deep knowledge as well, does that benefit your patients? And you know, are you able to sort of maybe notice when something else might be going on and refer them on to the vet for those sorts of conditions?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always in the treadmill touching along their backs and their legs and feeling for unusual lumps and bumps, help owners monitoring the size of them. And I say, you know, get used to the feel of this lump and sort of know if it's the size of a pea. And then if I see them in 2 weeks' time and it's grown to a blueberry, I often do say, you know, should really get this checked. And any little lumps and bumps, noticing with owners as well, I think owners know their pets the most. They know if they're feeling down, or you can see it in their personalities. They start to, well, they stop enjoying the things that they really love, and it can be often a sign of pain. And the owners have picked up on that first. They're brilliant. Owners are the best source of knowledge for their dogs. They are the voice, really. And then we can help work out things. But yeah, we said we just would send them straight back to the vets. If we found anything that we hadn't had on our consent forms that we're treating, we'd just say, I think this is something that the vet should be monitoring for you. And then you're welcome to come straight back. But we just need a check-in. Yeah.
And do you see any sort of benefits sometimes in behaviour of pets as well? Is that ever sort of something that comes that improves through treatment?
Yeah, I had a beautiful German Shepherd, and he was so used to an active life. I think they had lots of land, the owners, and he was out every day with them. And towards the end of his life, he'd really slowed down and they were heartbroken. The owners didn't know what to do. And I would get him in the treadmill and we'd do a few minutes of walking. So we'd break it down into 30 seconds on the treadmill, lots of massage, then another 30 seconds and build him up. And they said his demeanor improved for the few days afterwards, where he'd been able to, he just felt better. You know, he'd had that mental stimulation of being in the water, all that lovely warmth around him, a bit of massage, interaction with someone else. They were so pleased, and I was so proud of him that he was feeling better.
Oh, fantastic. And are there any times, Tamsin, when you just think, actually, I can't help. There's nothing that will change the situation for this animal. Do you have any times when it just feels like you can't do anything more?
Yeah, there are sometimes when the water is almost dangerous for the animals to go in. So if a dog is really struggling to stand and then we put them in the water, obviously that would be detrimental. They could be so weak that they could go under. So in those situations, we do say, I think it's time that we either move on to maybe just some physiotherapy, or just, you know, it's maybe getting to a time where there's not much more we can do, but, you know, you're welcome to, well, we always stay in touch with most of our clients, but yeah, we try and work out what else we can do, and we help with quality life assessments. I can put them in touch with people who can help with that side as well, which is, it's really sad, but it's the kindest thing is to give these owners, you know, assessments to do at home to work out how well the animal's doing as well, and that they are getting that quality of life.
I think that's one of the things as pet owners that we all have to face, isn't it? I mean, they don't have such long lifespans as us, and making sure that you give them the best quality of life, and with somebody like yourself being able to take those extra steps perhaps beyond what may have been available before, you know, sounds like a really rewarding area to work in. I bet some of your clients, though, are very cheeky. Have you got any really cheeky pup stories that you can share with us?
There's a few. Some of them just, they've come in and they run straight in, get in the treadmill. They're just waiting to start the treatment. And we have to say, come on, we need to do our stance analysis first. And I need to talk to your owner, make sure you've not got anything else going on. And so, yeah, some of them just go in there. Some of them will help themselves. We have a tray of treats on the side of the treadmill so we can grab them and give them to the dogs when they're working hard. And some of them are tall enough to jump up on the side and put their face in and just help themselves. We had a great Dane. He would just put his face into the tray. He was tall enough to reach over and in and just would, chow down all these biscuits. Yeah, just dribble everywhere. It's a lot of spit and, a lot get dribbled on a lot.
Oh, well, that sounds delightful, Tamsin.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens. And what about the sort of main highlights of your job? I mean, obviously the dribble aside, what are the highlights for you?
I was talking to a client this week and she was saying her little Cavapoo, she used to really wince in pain on her knee. She has luxating patella, so that's where the kneecap pops out, and it can be really quite painful for them. And she was saying before coming to Healing Hounds, her little dog would wince and be really painful, wouldn't want to go on walks and things, on quite high pain medicine. And we've got her down to no meds. She's visiting every sort of 3 weeks to see us. And she's really enjoying life, walks beautifully. Yeah, totally off all the pain medication, which I think is, a lot of owners are looking for an alternative therapy than having too many drugs on board, which there is definitely benefits to having pain relief. It does all work and it helps break the cycle of, to build the muscle, we need to not have the dogs in pain. But also, you know, I think most people are keen to not have their dogs needing medication as well.
So Tamsin, walk us through, if somebody was to phone up and say that they've got an issue with their dog, they're noticing it's in pain, what would be the very first thing that they would do?
So we would register them on our system. We'd have a chat with them and go through some basic questions to see, work out which sort of therapy they may be. Owners also like to think that their dog will enjoy hydro, and it's not always the most appropriate course of action. So we have a nice chat. Usually the vets have suggested physio and or hydro. So we've already got that sort of in there to talk to them about. And then we book them in for an appointment for an initial consultation and assessment, and I would get the vets to send over a consent form with a full clinical history. So then prior to their appointment, we get to read through all their information, have a look at their x-rays, really go through, get to know the dog just from the history. And then the owners come in, we do our analysis, we do the stance, we measure the muscle as well. So we get a baseline of making sure that we, you know, how much muscle wastage there is on each limb, just the circumference. And then we go through some stuff with the owners about how they can be helping their dogs at home as well. Lots of owners don't realize that these beautiful wooden floorings that they have throughout their house are so lovely, but they're so frightening for dogs that can't always coordinate their legs properly. So suggesting things like runners or just even towels put down. And then it's amazing how the next week they'll come in and say, oh, my dog follows the towels like a map through the house. It's just explaining to people, giving them information really, because it's the, you know, you don't get a dog to think, oh, I need to now accommodate, my whole house has to change for this dog because of an injury. Just teaching them how to help. So they'd come in for a consultation, we'd do lots of measurements, and we'd give them their first treatment, whether that's physio or hydro. We get them into the treadmill, we get in with them, we give them lots of treats, lots of positive reinforcement, so they're knowing that they're doing a really good job of staying with us and letting us help them. Then the water comes in, we still lots of positive praise and lots of biscuits, cheese, cream cheese. And then we get the belt to move a little bit and just encourage them to walk and build that momentum, and then let them have a rest. And then we do it again a few times. So they get their first treatments in the treadmill. And then, usually we book them in for the following week. Sometimes if they're really needing it, we can do twice a week. But on average, we see most dogs once a week for 6 to 8 weeks, sometimes 10 weeks. And then we try and drop them down to every other week and then spread out the appointments. And we've got dogs that when I first opened, I still see every 6 to 8 weeks just for a check-in, make sure they're still mobile. Yeah. So I've still got good friends from back then.
Is it something that insurance companies will support Tamsin typically, or is this something that people pay for privately?
No, insurance is covered. We're under NARC, which is the National Association of Registered Canine Hydrotherapists. So we're on their register, and that's what insurance companies will look at. So we say to clients, make sure you read all of your small print before going ahead, because you don't want to have a paid for all this treatment thinking that you're going to be reimbursed by insurance. So as it's a contract between each owner and their insurance, we say make sure you check it. A lot of insurance will have a small pocket of alternative therapies. And so even though owners will think, oh, I've used all £6,000 on these operations, sometimes they have another £1,000 for treatment like hydro or physio or both. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's not something that you have to necessarily self-refer to either. It can be done through a vet, I'm guessing.
Yeah, both. So some owners just say, I think my dog would really benefit. And so we just go straight ahead and message the vets and get the consent through. Sometimes the vets have already suggested it. Vets are getting more on board with, most vets are really fine with getting some hydro and physio on board. So we're all helping each other, and we send through vet reports as well. Sometimes early, if we're worrying about the dog and we think more pain relief is needed or there's something else going on. Sometimes they come to us for their hips, but actually it's referred because they've got elbows that are really sore. So they've pushed all their weight back into their hips, and that's what's causing the problem. Got the owner to go to the vets, but actually it's because they've totally shifted their weight back a little bit, and that's pressure on the hips. Yeah.
Well, how interesting. And it sounds like such a, you know, we sound like we're so lucky to have a specialist service like yourselves in Hertfordshire, because I know so many people who have dogs with, you know, maybe problems even as pups or, you know, through to old age, they cannot, you know, we want them to have the best quality of life possible. So to have a specialist like you to call upon just sounds like such a brilliant addition to our local community.
Well, I'm very proud to be a part of where we are, and everyone just wants the best for their dogs. It's so lovely to be in that environment where everyone is wanting to come in and be involved with the dogs and give them the best quality.
And how would our listeners find you, Tamsin?
We're on Instagram and Facebook at Healing Hounds Clinic, and our website is healinghoundsclinic.com.
Fantastic. And you're based in Southdown, that's correct, isn't it?
In Harpenden. So we've got, we just yeah, on the high street and down in South Down. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Tamsin. What a fantastic service it sounds like you have available to the local community. And I'm delighted that you've been able to talk about it with us today and share your expertise. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for asking me. It's really kind of you.
Well, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. Thanks, Tamsin.
Thank you.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Thanks for staying with us on The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and today I'm really delighted to be joined by Jill Stevens, who is... You have a few hats, actually, don't you, Jill? All revolve somehow and some way around hedgehogs.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a volunteer at the London Colney Hedgehog Rescue and a member of Wilderhood Watch, which is the sort of grassroots wildlife organisation here in St Albans.
Brilliant. And Jill, we wanted to bring you on to the Parents Show and talk to you about the spectacular work you do to create environments for hedgehogs locally, but also protect and rescue them. So, I mean, I defy anybody not to have a soft spot for hedgehogs. They're just, aren't they just the cutest?
They are gorgeous, and they're always voted Britain's favourite mammal. But the sad thing is that a lot of people haven't even seen them. And, you know, a lot of children have never seen a hedgehog, which is desperately sad.
It is, it is. They're so cute. One night I was pulling the blinds, it was dark, and I just saw this little waddle at the side of my house, and this little hedgehog was triggered the sensor light, and I could just see him waddling across, and it was just the cutest. Oh, he's such a beautiful sight.
They are incredibly cute, but they will get into all sorts of mischief. They're very quiet. They're difficult to spot, but actually they can be quite noisy.
Really? That really surprises me. No, I wasn't expecting you to say that.
Yeah. Especially at mating.
Oh, season. Okay. And when is that actually, Jill?
Now?
Is it?
Yeah, spring, yeah.
Well, let's hope that all the hedgehogs in the area have lots of baby hoglets, because they're in danger, aren't they, Jill?
They really are, yes. They're actually red listed.
They're
vulnerable to extinction. So they went on the red list, I think, in 2020. And in the 1950s, there was something like 50 million hedgehogs in this country. And now the estimate is there are under a million. And actually, even in the last few years since I've been involved, I've just seen the numbers go down locally. You know, the truth is you don't even see them on the roads anymore.
No.
And that in itself is an indication that they're just not around.
Yeah.
They really are in trouble. And everybody loves them, but... And the good thing is there are, you know, simple things that we can all do to try and help them.
Great. So first of all, will you tell me a little bit about the two initiatives that you're involved in? So you're involved in London Colney Hedgehog Rescue and Wilderhood Watch.
Yeah, so I kind of got involved about 8 years ago, really, with hedgehogs when I did what you did, realised I had them in my own garden, delighted to find a bit of hedgehog poo. I thought, aha, they must be around. And then I lay in wait for them every evening to see how many there were in the garden. And I got a wildlife camera so that I could check out what was going on. Learnt about them. That winter, I found a little one that was out in minus temperatures and it was still really, really tiny. And I knew enough about them to know that it wouldn't survive the winter. So I contacted London Colney Hedgehog Rescue, which was full. So I overwintered that little hedgehog myself, fed it up, and then re-released it the following spring and then volunteered for the rescue.
Brilliant.
And I've been there ever since. So I'm kind of involved in, just helping out, you know, at the rescue, cleaning and stuff like that. But I've also become a bit of a sort of satellite for having some of the disabled ones. So I've got 5 disabled hedgehogs that can't be released because they're missing limbs. And I've got a big enclosure, a sort of aviary thing that they are in my garden. And then I act as a sort of first aid post, I suppose, for the rescue, help with re-releasing them. And then through Wilderhood Watch, which is at a very local level, we try and literally just get neighbours in streets involved in various projects, one of which is Hedgehog Street, or we have a challenge called Hogways and Highways, which is
really, I love it.
Just about getting neighbours together to put in hedgehog holes between their fences, because hedgehogs need to access our gardens if they're going to find food to survive. So just at a very local level, that's about just trying to get neighbours involved to do the right thing for hedgehogs.
And I know I've done a little bit with Wilderhood Watch, too little, not enough. I'm not claiming I've helped nearly enough as much as I'd like to, but they have so many wonderful initiatives, and it all started locally, didn't it? It was local people, it's a local concept, and so many St. Albans roads have signed up to Wilderhood Watch.
Oh, there are a lot of roads now, yes, and most of them start with an accessible project like Hedgehog Street, putting in hedgehog holes, or planting pollinator flowers. We've got a bat survey going on at the moment. You know, there's all sorts of initiatives, but it just is about everybody doing just a little thing, just making small changes in their own garden, which is so easy for everybody to do, but it makes a huge difference. And yeah, certainly for hedgehogs, the whole point is everybody just making that change in their garden, putting a hole in the fence, leaving a little area to go wild, not using chemicals and slug pellets, small things that everybody can do, and it will make a huge difference. And it does. You know, we see that the roads where neighbours have got together and they've linked their gardens, those are the pockets where hedgehogs are surviving. So in St. Albans, you know, we have a lot of terraced houses in streets where the gardens all back onto each other. And we also have sort of squares of gardens, again, where all the gardens form a nice area where all the gardens are interlinked. So if a hedgehog can get around those gardens and there's enough food within them, they don't have to cross the roads. They don't have to travel further to find a mate. They don't have to travel kilometres to try and find enough food. So those pockets where houses are linked and where people are gardening, you know, organically, and they're not putting down slug pellets and they're not putting down rat poison, and they're planting the plants that attract insects, because fundamentally that's what hedgehogs eat. You know, their favourite food is beetles and caterpillars. And, you know, we know that butterflies are struggling. So obviously if there are no butterflies, there's no caterpillars. And if people are, you know, spraying their entire garden with insecticide, or they're planting non-native plants that don't attract insects, without insects, there's no food for the hedgehogs. So those areas that are linked and are not using insecticides and are planting with insects in mind and pollinators, those are the areas where hedgehogs are just about hanging on in there.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea of hedgehog highways. Or hedgehog streets. It's such a lovely idea. And you kind of go around St. Albans and occasionally you see a little sign that says that it's a hedgehog street. Yeah. And even, I think there are so many kind of adaptations or accommodations you could do to your house to make it hedgehog friendly with so little disturbance to you personally. For example, we have a walled garden, so it's difficult for us to put a hole in it, but we have a side alley, and the side alley has a gate, so we've put the gate up high enough for a hedgehog to come so he can come in, use our garden, take whatever he needs and exit again. But what other tips do you have about accessibility? How big does the hole have to be? Because if you've got those wooden fences around your garden, they're really easy to cut a hole out of.
Really, really easy to put a hole in. And actually, they don't need a very big hole. I mean, the guidance is a CD-sized hole, but actually just a 10-centimetre diameter hole, sort of, you know, size of a drain pipe, they can get through. If you don't want to put a hole through your fence, just a little hole underneath it, an inch or two under a fence, they can squeeze through quite small spaces. So, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, my dog will escape, or it'll allow foxes in. I mean, they'll get through a very small gap. foxes can jump fences. It makes no difference at all.
I've seen them do it.
So yeah, just, you know, a small gap and a hedgehog will find its way. What else can you do? Well, I mean, people say, well, no, what can I do to help hedgehogs? Yeah. And my answer usually is, the best thing you can do in terms of gardening is nothing. Yeah. Your garden, just leave 1 or 2 meters to go wild. Don't cut the grass. Let native weeds grow. One of the best things you can do in a corner of your garden is put a pallet down. You can pick up pallets for free. People are always giving them away. And then all your garden clippings, grass, leaves, chuck it all on top of the pallet and have a sort of open, decaying pile of greenery. And that will attract bugs, that will attract worms. And a hedgehog loves being under a pallet. It's also a really good nesting place. Quite often you'll find hedgehogs nest under things like pallets. So that's just a really easy way of making just a little wild area. And again, because all our gardens back onto each other, if everybody left 1 meter or 2 meters at the end of their garden and a gap through the fence, you'd have a huge corridor, a wildlife corridor connecting all those gardens, which would just be, you know, perfect for the hedgehogs.
Lovely. And it's so little hassle to do something like that. Like you say, a pallet or, you know, even half a pallet, but once they have a mound.
Or no pallet, but just you know, pile, rather than having a really tidy garden all round, collect up your leaves and just put them in a pile. I mean, when it comes to bonfire night, don't set fire to it like a bonfire. Check that the hedgehog's in there because they will love to sleep in a pile of leaves.
Yeah, and over winter.
Yes, it's perfect hibernating.
And I'd say the pallet is great protection from the foxes as well. Harder for the foxes to get at them if they're in underneath that.
Yes, I used to feed my hedgehogs under the pallet, actually, so the foxes couldn't get in there. Foxes, I have to say, are an issue with hedgehogs, not because they eat them, but they're hardwired to hunt small mammals, basically. Yeah. And unfortunately, over half our admissions at the rescue are as a result of a fox attack. Not all foxes will do it, just like not all cats catch birds, but they can't resist, you know, having a snap at those spindly legs as a hedgehog runs away.
Yeah.
And small hedgehogs, they'll just try and grab their head like they would a rat. And we're probably all aware that there are a lot of foxes in St. Albans. And people feed them, which they shouldn't do. And that's not just me saying that. You know, fox charities, Chris Packham, they all say don't feed them. They're apex predators. They don't need human intervention. And actually, it's detrimental to the foxes because they breed too much. If there's too much food, their numbers increase. So therefore, their territory decreases. They become more dependent on humans. And it's bad for them. You know, they get diseases and stuff. So, you know, I love foxes. I love to see a healthy fox, but leave them alone. And we shouldn't encourage them to, you know, come into contact with the hedgehogs because unfortunately the hedgehogs come off worse.
Yeah, they don't stand a chance, really, do they?
No.
Right. So Hedgehog Awareness Week is coming up and that's why we wanted to talk to you, Jill. Can you tell us a little bit about it? What's going on?
Well, it's one of those weeks that is all about raising awareness of hedgehogs. Because everybody knows about hedgehogs, but again, it's what do you do? How can we raise awareness of what you can do to support them? I always use it as an opportunity to sort of go around my neighbours and do that thing of, can we put a hole in the fence? Can you leave an area to go wild? It's just encouraging those steps to make people aware of what they can do. Because loads of people want to help, but sometimes they just don't realise what to do, what steps to take.
Where do you start?
Yes, and a lot of times, you know, people will say, well, I don't see hedgehogs in the garden. And I'll say, well, can they get into your garden? And the answer is, oh, no. And after that storm, we put up a new fence. And this is what's happening.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot around St. Albans, those fences with the concrete running boards.
Yeah.
Nothing can get through those.
No, and they must just completely rule out getting under them, getting over them, nothing. I mean, no hedgehog's going to manage with those.
And I've walked down streets and I've seen that, you know, every fence has got a concrete bottom. And so if a hedgehog ends up down that road. It has to walk all the way down the road or across the road to try and get into any sort of greenery. So if you're putting up a fence, a new fence, and you're contemplating the concrete running board, ask your contractor to put a hole in. There are some contractors who have hedgehog holes as standard in those concrete running boards. I mean, I think they should be standard anyway.
They should.
The more people that ask for them, the more it'll happen. And if not, you know, I know people who've got gadgets to gouge holes in. Or you can do a little ramp up to the wooden bit and put a hole in the wooden bit. But just, you know, hedgehogs can travel a kilometre a night. They need 20 to 30 gardens to find food. So they've just got to be able to get into your garden. And that's the simplest thing that people can do during Hedgehog Awareness Week.
Brilliant. Access to your garden. Figure it out for a tiny little mammal to get in and out.
Yeah.
And have that conversation with your neighbours. I mean, Wilderhood Watch, you guys have done this fantastic little pamphlet. I got it on WhatsApp and we'll be sure to put it on the Parents Show social media so that everybody can take a look and just see some tips about how to protect them. So you've given us some great tips about how to protect them. What about feeding them, Jill? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, in an ideal world, we shouldn't have to feed them at all. The best thing you can do, as I've mentioned already, is plant in your garden plants that will attract insects. Don't use chemicals. Don't have fake grass.
Yeah.
I know if you've got kids, it's really tempting to sort of put down AstroTurf, but, you know, that is just awful.
No worms.
No worms, no anything.
Yeah.
So, yes, so feeding hedgehogs, you can do. You can feed them any good quality cat food, ideally cat food that's got high animal protein as the first named ingredient, not cereals. Dry food, you can just get dry kitten or cat food. If you're going to feed them, please feed them in some sort of feeding station or inside a hedgehog house so that the local cats and foxes don't get to the food first. There are all sorts of ideas for feeding stations online. I think we might have got some on Wilderhood Watch. Just something like, well, you can make a really easy feeding station just with bricks, making a sort of small entrance and a right angle corridor so that cats and foxes can't pour in and get the food.
Yeah.
And yes, I mean, that's how I started, just putting out food every night, somewhere that foxes and cats can't get to. Hedgehog will sniff it out. Their smell is incredible.
Great.
Once they know where food is, they will come regularly. I've got one that comes like clockwork every night.
Great.
Food. And then, you know, you can put cameras out. These days, you know, they're just the little ring type cameras. Portable, you can move them around and you can watch them every night. You can watch them go in,
amazing,
come out, see what goes on. So that's all a lot more affordable than, you know, buying a big trail camera.
Yeah, it's interesting because
water is the most important thing.
And that's what I was going to ask you. Of course, water. Yeah. They need it more than they need food.
Yes. And especially, you know, we've had a really dry spell. The ground's been rock hard, which again is awful for food. But every animal needs water. Insects, birds, hedgehogs, they all need water. So just a saucer, you know, a plant saucer of water, keep it topped up. I mean, I have to refill mine every day because
really
bath in it, it gets drunk overnight. So, yeah, it's really important to put down water.
It never goes amiss. But that's really interesting because I have a little hedgehog in my hedgehog house in my garden. Mm. And I had read that you shouldn't put food inside the hedgehog house, which was a bit counterintuitive to me because it's a little haven. Even if they don't make a nest there, it's a little place to go in and have a rest, you know, because they're safe, aren't they?
That's right. I mean, whether you use your hedgehog house hoping that it makes it into a house or use it as a feeding station. To be honest, in my experience, hedgehogs tend not to use the houses because they far rather sleep in a pile of leaves or somewhere that's better hidden.
Yeah.
So if they're not sleeping in the house, you can repurpose it for a feeding station.
I'll do that. That sounds great. And dry cat food, little bit of water on a low saucer, because obviously there's no point in putting a big tall bowl out there because they won't be able to get into it.
No, that's right. Yeah. Dry food's best, certainly in the summer, because they love wet food and do feed wet food because it goes every night. But if there's any left over, obviously it attracts flies. So just a bit of dry food would be much appreciated.
Appreciated. Lovely. So listen, if parents are listening in, you know, obviously one of the most important things is to inspire our next generation, our kids, our grandkids, to protect our environment, and hedgehogs are clearly an important part about that. Mm. What advice would you give to parents? Because actually, like, protecting the hedgehogs in your local environment sounds like the perfect project to do with your children.
Absolutely, yes. A lot of the things that we've already covered. I mean, making a bug hotel, kids always love to make a bug hotel, which is the sort of pallet idea to attract insects and worms. Planting, you know, you can plant wildflowers. You can make a little wildlife meadow. Making a hedgehog house, you know, you can buy ready-made hedgehog houses, but you can also make them for your garden, make a feeding station, as I say, out of bricks. What else can you do? Tidy up litter. Litter's always a problem for hedgehogs. If there's anything they can stick their head in or fall in, you can absolutely guarantee a hedgehog will.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, just I think probably a wildlife corner is probably a really good idea for children. You know, and don't sweep up all your leaves. Well, you can get your kids to sweep up the leaves, but then put them all in a pile.
That's it. Because the other thing about, I'm always a bit, we have lots of trees around where we are, and I'm always a bit reluctant to sweep up all the leaves.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you go to sweep it, you realise under it there's so many worms and bugs and all sorts of stuff. And in winter, I can tell that something, maybe it's a fox, maybe it's a hedgehog, I don't know, has scraped away the leaves to get the food below. So they've done a kind of a tidy up job for me. But it's really important not to have a pristine garden anymore. Yeah, isn't that if...
Yeah, having a garden that's weed-free and covered in bark chippings or something, you know, that doesn't really help the wildlife. And it's not just hedgehogs, you know, it's birds, it's amphibians, it's wildlife in general. So, and I think that's what's changed over the years. You know, gardens used to be just connected by a hedge and full of native cottage garden type flowers, which were great for insects. And unfortunately, the sort of trend is for very tidy gardens, you know, non-native plants. And of course, our climate is changing. That's partly why we plant different things. And climate change is also impacting hedgehogs. You know, those long, dry, drought summers are dreadful for a hedgehog that needs insects and worms because everything goes way down in the ground. So,
yeah.
And then we have, you know, winters, this last winter's just been incredibly wet, you know, flooding. Whenever there's areas of flooding, you think, how many hibernating hedgehogs were under that? So, yeah, it's tough for them. They are up against it. But, you know, they've been around for millions of years. It'd be such a shame if we lose them in our lifetime. So, yeah, the next generation have got to do better.
And you know what? You've given us just a handful of really practical, easy tips, Jill. Right. They're totally manageable. And, you know, actually, it makes your life easier if you don't need a pristine garden. And, you know, give it up for the wildlife.
I just let everything go wild. And I just say, it's for nature.
Yeah. And if the neighbours complain, just say, I'm doing my bit for the environment. You know, don't succumb to peer pressure. Just because, absolutely, the more pollinators, the more flowers that are pollinating, the more insects, the more food for birds. It's just such a virtuous cycle. And the thing that I'm always astounded by when I talk to wonderful people like yourself, Jill, are doing such a lovely, lovely job to protect our environment, is we can actually make a difference, even in your garden.
Yes, and you see it. I mean, I left the end of my garden to go wild, and suddenly all these white comfrey popped up. I mean, you know, they're classed as weed, but it's a beautiful plant, really. I mean, weeds are just, they're just plants in the wrong place. You know, some of them are actually beautiful. And this white comfrey, the bees absolutely love it. You know, the whole area is buzzing, literally.
Lovely.
With bees. So, you know, I was not about to remove them. And now they come up every year, this whole area of white comfrey. So, you know, if you leave an area, see what comes up. It's amazing. You know, nature has a way of planting stuff and the insects find it. So, yeah, see what nature can do if you leave it.
Lovely. They're absolutely. So listen, Jill, thanks a million for sharing your wisdom and your kindness with us. It's infectious. And I'm sure parents listening in will do that one little thing in the garden to help protect the hedgehogs and just support our environment.
I mean, there's lots of stuff for kids to do out there. You know, if you are interested, I recommend Hedgehog Street, a website called Hedgehog Street, and they have a lot of downloadable stuff for kids to do. There's also a big hedgehog map. So if you see a hedgehog, you can go online and enter where you saw it. And if you make a hedgehog hole, you can also put your hedgehog hole on the map.
Lovely.
It's quite good to go on and see what's happening in the area and where hedgehogs have been seen and where there are other hedgehog holes. So you can put your own on the map.
That's such a cute idea. And of course, there's loads of resources on Wilderhood Watch.
Yeah.
So, and if you want to start a Wilderhood Watch on your street, if there isn't one already, I'm sure they would be over the moon to support you.
Absolutely, yes. Check out the website and get in touch. It just requires one person on a street to have a bit of a vision of what could be and get a few neighbours involved and you're away.
Lovely. Listen, Jill, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks.
Oh, well, thanks. Thanks. I could go on all day.
Well, we'll have you back. We'll have you back. Any more innovations on hedgehog protection? We want to know about it.
Sure. I probably ought to mention as well, if you see a hedgehog out in the day, obviously hedgehogs are nocturnal. Hedgehogs out in the day, at this time of year, it might be a mother making a nest. So if they're moving with purpose, look otherwise healthy, just leave them alone. If they're lying there in the daytime, if there are flies buzzing around them, if they're going in circles or wobbly, they need rescuing. So yes, a hedgehog out in the day is not normal, but at this time of year, they may be a nesting mother or making nests or changing nests.
Great. And who should they contact? London Colney Rescue?
Yes, London Colney Hedgehog Rescue. If we're full, which is often the case, then contact British Hedgehog Preservation Society and they'll put you in touch with another local rescue. There are a few around, there's one in Harpenden, there's one in Hatfield. So yeah, just get in touch.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, Jill. Lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.